This is the TSN MMA Show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
Nunes retains after stopping Pennington in a round that it seems she did not want to take part in. Mackenzie Dern misses weight but easily defeats Cooper. Is Gastelum next in line for a title shot? One of Joe's favorite fighters ever calls it a career. Chuck Liddell, on the other hand, comes out of retirement at age 48 and wants to fight John Jones. We'll talk about that. And we're joined by Kamaru Usman, who will compete in the main event of UFC Fight Night in Chile, and the bipolar rock and roller himself, Mauro Ranallo, to discuss his new documentary about living with bipolar disorder. And also, Leonard Ellerbee and Badu Jack stopped by. They're going to talk about, it's nearly the year anniversary of Mayweather and McGregor and that whole tour, so I want to get their reflections on that whole spectacle. And we are back for another episode of the TSN MMA Show. Thanks to those listening on TSN Radio in Toronto and Ottawa. Order the podcast. Please tell your friends, review the show, and subscribe if you have not yet done so. Joe, you're back from France. Yeah, little lots jet of crazy knockouts.
Little jet lag here. But yeah, we had a wicked time in France, man. It was just, we're in Lille, my first time there. But our fights were just awesome. We had our ESPN part of their card. We have a UFC Fight Pass side, and then we have our ESPN part. Our ESPN side killed it. We had our young Thai fighter, Pet Panamarung, that I'm sure a lot of people watching saw. He'd had this flying round kick knockout, two head kick knockouts in a row, so he's looking to get another title shot. You know, we saw Doumbé win and back on his winning ways. We had, you know, our one of our best fighters to watch, Michael Dute, ended up TKO'd loss to one of the Frenchmen. So Overall, man, just a good night of fights.
I watched a bit of the Fight Pass card.
Yeah, that one wasn't as exciting as the main card, but still some good fights.
Yeah, well, decent. The main card is what you want to deliver.
And a beautiful voice to listen to while you're
absolutely
watching it.
Yeah, you know what? Todd Grisham has never sounded better. I agree with you.
Yeah, you think so? I know.
I'm just playing with you. I'm taking the air out of your wind out of your sails.
I know. He's good, though, man. He's awesome.
Yeah, so. he gets excited. He's, you know what? He's perfect for that sport.
Oh, yeah, he likes it.
With the pro wrestling experience, you kind of have to be over the top. And over the top stuff happens in Glory.
Absolutely.
Like, those knockouts are over the top.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's tough. He said he had a hard time with the UFC sometimes because they have a little bit more of a calm style approach where
it's more technical.
Yeah, he worked with Brian Stann, and they don't have that, like, those moments of, like, excitement like we do in kickboxing as much. But I mean, you want people to be excited, too. If we're talking and there's a great strike that happened that's so entertaining, and then all of a sudden we're not excited about it, how are you supposed to be excited about it? So we need to get people pumped up.
And Mauro is the master of that.
Amazing. Both of those guys are incredible at it. So
absolutely. And not to take away from John Anik. I think John Anik is the best we've ever heard in terms of the UFC.
I think he's getting pushed up. I mean, I know we talked about this, but he feels like he gets pushed aside now, right?
With the
three-man booth?
I don't mind it, though, because I think John picks his words carefully. Like, I don't think he needs to hear his voice. There are some guys that kind of need to hear their voice, and I feel like he knows when to get out of the way and does it perfectly.
Yeah. Fair.
It's a craft.
I mean, if you even like watch anyone who works with Mauro, it's very hard to get voice time when Mauro's there because he's so dominant. He's so fast talking. He talks a mile a minute. He's so exciting. He always has new facts, new things coming. So it's really hard to get points in with Mauro, where Anik lets the color commentator build and work his story.
Mm-hmm. Both are good.
Yeah,
I think both approaches work. It just depends on who you're working with and what you want to do. I think Mauro's fantastic. I love listening to him. But you know what? There are the good thing about combat sports is a lot of the play-by-play guys, like, they're almost all terrific. Like, there's a lot of really good talent in the field.
Yeah, I agree.
So the big topic, I guess, that came out of UFC 224, the main event, Amanda Nunes versus Raquel Pennington on a night of very exciting fights, was the situation with Pennington. And what happened in between the fourth and fifth round, she was on the stool. Or actually, sorry, she was standing up, hands against the cage, and said, you know, I don't want to go back out there. I don't want to be here. You know, a lot of people criticized her corner for having her go back out. I was not among them. And the reason why is I look at the situation and what's going on, and I just don't have any real life experience that can give me an educated opinion. You know, sometimes I'll chime in on technical aspects of fights that I just notice, like observations I make, and that doesn't mean that I have a very educated opinion on that either. I'm not a combat sports practitioner, but I'm lucky enough to have a co-host who is, and I kind of want to get your take on it. You know, we saw what happened to Pennington leading up to the fourth round, or the end of the fourth round, rather. You know, it wasn't any better or worse each round. She didn't take, like, a severe beating or anything like that, but she was consistently being beaten up by Nunes throughout the fight.
Yeah. I don't know. We don't know what is going on in the corner. I think that's my biggest issue. We don't know what's going on. We don't know what their past is. We saw a split, like, screenshot of their corner work, which a lot of the complaints were, one, she wanted out, but maybe she was mentally defeated, and I think that's the problem. If she was physically beaten, yes, her nose was apparently broken, but afterwards listening, it wasn't. It was a few stitches, but those things don't matter in fights, as crappy as it sounds. The broken noses, you know, your finger might be broken.
I mean, look at the Jack Hermanson and latest fight earlier. Well, broke a rib in the first round and just kept going.
You have to think about that. So the physical pain, I was okay with, right? So, I mean, it wasn't enough physical damage to say, okay, you're going to get more damage done. Yes, you were losing, but I don't see what the big issue is, why everybody's freaking out. She wanted to quit, but as a corner, if I don't see my fighter physically hurt and damaged that badly, where it's a broken nose is a broken nose. It's not, in my opinion, should be a stop fighting.
The guys train with broken noses all the time.
Yeah, all the time. Yeah. I mean, that's not the issue. Her leg was sore, so her spirit was gone. So as a corner, your job is to bring their spirit up. You try to say, come on, you can do this. There is some mistakes, but it's nerve-wracking being in a corner. It's not like we're calm sitting behind a computer now sipping a coffee and
unless
now we have
Jackson
to make a decision.
It is a
difficult decision. Mm-hmm. Me being, you know, a commentator and being around so many fights, I don't know if there's anyone, you know, very few who are part of fights as much as I am. I still get nervous in the corner. It's my guy. I have emotional connection. I want them to win. We put in so much life and sacrifice into this. So it's really hard. You have to kind of push that side a little bit. So I'm okay with them, you know, pushing her and encouraging her to go on. I mean, look at someone like Uriah Faber and Jose Aldo. That leg was so damaged, right? That was one of the worst leg kick damages we saw in MMA. Mm-hmm. But he still got up. He found other tools. He found other weapons. Like, so, I mean, to give up on that, I think she would have been upset. So I think, you know, they encouraged her to do it. And I think it was fine in my eyes. And if she was really that bad, she should have just said, no, I'm done.
One thing that I thought was interesting that I heard Chael Sonnen say actually on the MMA Hour this week was that a lot of fighters, like rear naked chokes rarely happen in sparring or training, and he says they're pretty much almost completely avoidable in fights, but a lot of fighters use them as a way out. Like if they're done,
they give up and they give their back.
Yeah. Is that something that you see?
In which way? Like that they give them back?
That seems to be what happened in the fifth round with Nunes. You could tell that Pennington kind of wanted to get out. But, I mean, there's a big difference in a fighter's mind between losing on the stool and losing in the cage, right? Like going forward in your career.
I would say so.
There are less regrets if you lose in that fashion versus, you know, you went back out there, you fought your heart out, you took some shots, you did your best. As opposed to on the stool, you're like, okay, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, no, it's hard because you lose. You want to go out on your shield, what people say. And I want to say that, you know, my perspective of that it changed a little bit now because there's Joe who was, you know, pre-title Joe, and then there's Joe now, post-reflection, you know, looking at my career. Joe, in his career, I looked at my corner before this world title fight. I says, there is nothing in this world for you to throw in this towel. I would rather, and it sounds stupid to say, like post-Joe saying, mm-hmm. I would rather die in this ring than lose and come out without this title. Do not, ever what you do, do not throw the towel in. And that's why it's really important. Like, I mean, if we can get my manager and corner, Costa Claudianos, on, but let me tell you, it is probably the hardest decision. But I knew in that moment, I don't want anyone to throw in the towel. This is a different situation because Pennington at this point is she gave up verbally. I would have never done anything like that. So it's hard to say how I would react, and I hope, you know, my guys are never in that state where I have to pull them out that way.
We've got Costa on the line.
Oh,
Costa, I hope you were expecting our call. I just put you right through. Is that cool?
Yeah, sure. Sounds good.
All right. So Joe was just talking about you. You know, you were his corner and manager for his fight career. He mentioned earlier that during the DeBont fight, he wasn't really there in between, I guess, the fourth and the fifth round. I'm not really sure what my question is, but it's more looking at Joe's career. Was there ever a time where you were like, I don't want Joe to go back out there? I mean, you have an emotional connection to Joe. You're with him all the time. Did that ever come into play?
Yeah, I mean, with Joe, I think it's a little different. I've known him since he was 3 years old, and we kind of grew up together. So it's more than just a corner. It's kind of that friendship brother kind of relationship. And, I mean, it's that thing where it's like, okay, where do you kind of draw the line? And We had conversations before where Joe's like, listen, I don't care what's going on.
Yeah, I just said that. I just told that story.
Don't throw in the towel. We're gonna have some problems. That's the referee's job. And it's like, okay, what's the health of the fighter? And then, I mean, into the bomb fight, I mean, Joe won, and he was out of it between rounds. But you, actually, he was pretty lucid. I mean, now he tells us that he doesn't, he was out of it. But actually, when he was in there, he was remembering, and he was knowing what's going on. And he was in actually good shape in that fight, and he never said, I'm going to quit. But if he would have come to me and said, listen, I'm done, I would... I wouldn't say, okay, fine, you're done. I would ask him again, Joe, are you sure you're done? Because usually the first time, it's just kind of an emotional type of thing. You have to ask them again. And if he would have said yes and turned around, I would have stopped the fight, because that's him making the decision. It's not me. My whole thing always was that there's two people that should be making this decision. It's the referee who's in charge of the fighter's safety, or the doctors. I consider them kind of one. They're in charge of the fighter's safety, or the fighter himself. Or herself, because they know what's best for them. As the coroner, my job is to make sure that they're in there and they're executing the game plan, and you're seeing if there's something else that you could see, like they're totally out of it, then you call over the doctor.
My point was saying, if I was physically beaten, that's an easy decision to stop the fight if I say I'm tired. But if it's in this fight here, it was her leg sore. She took too many low kicks or something, and it seemed like she was more maybe mentally broken. If I was mentally broken, you would try to encourage me and get me motivated back on, right?
Yeah, I would try and get you motivated back on. But if you're mentally broken, then you're done. I think what makes the difference between that makes a champion from an also-ran or a good fighter is someone who can't get mentally broken. And if you're mentally broken, it's like, okay, this fight's done. Why are you going to go back in there? But if you're someone who's going to get to that next level, you're not going to get mentally broken, or you can bring them back with one quick thing. But if they're saying they're done, forget it, man. They're done. Like, it's not, they don't have kind of what it takes in that fight, or and then you kind of go back and say, what went wrong mentally wise, and let's see what we can do.
Like, the way I look at this too is, say someone is physically exhausted, right? How many times have we seen people go to the corner and they're like, I just got no more energy left to go into this third round. What should you, should we stop it? Like, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I think people are going too crazy on Pennington's corner in my eyes.
No, man. If the fighter wants to quit sometime, that's a lesson that they're going to have to learn. If they leave that fight and say, I can't believe I just quit, that's on me. I'm going to go and train harder than it is. But
you're my friend. You wouldn't want me to just quit like that.
No, but you wouldn't quit. That's the difference. Mentally, you wouldn't quit.
That's why I'm saying it's hard for us to decide, because I would never do it, right?
Yeah, but that's the difference. You're a world champion, Joel. That's the difference between a world champion's mindset and someone who's not a world champion.
Do you think that rules Pennington out from being a world champion, or is that something that can be changed? Is that something that, if you go to a sports psychologist or something along those lines, could that can people
good question.
Get that mentality, or is that just kind of a bred thing?
You know what, Aaron? You're born a champion. I'm sorry. You're born a champion.
I appreciate you saying about me, Costa. Yeah, I know we've only met
totally
once or twice.
And I've seen it. You can train your mind. You can train your body to the top of your potential. But there's that one difference that a champion has that they just don't care. It's kind of like with Joe. I always said you kind of have a mental illness at the top. Like, there's nothing that would make you quit. It's just that drive. It's that single focus that he would never even think of saying, I'm totally done, I'm not going back. We had even outside the fight, there was Joe's first professional fight, we had a weight cut where he had to get down to something like, what was it, 152 or something? And you were...
No, it was like 158 or something.
158, and he was like 180 something. It was a really dangerous weight cut. We'd never do it again, like now knowing that we know. And he was sitting on the stool there, and I'm like, Joe, don't continue this. Like, this weight cut, it was like really bad. Like, my kidneys are hurting. This is a terrible situation. But he wouldn't stop. He's like, I'm going to do this. And we went out and won the fight. That's a whole different story together. But it's just that thing in your mind where I don't care. I'm just going to go. That's how you're born with that.
Yeah, the thing that blows my mind about Joe is, you know, he says, you know, why can't I be a doctor? If I you know, did school for like 5-10 years, I could be a doctor. Or, you know, I mentioned
be whatever I want.
Yeah, I said like, do you think you could beat like Demian Maia in a jiu-jitsu competition? And he was like, well, give me like 5 years to train, and yeah, I could. That kind of mindset, like I can't wrap my head around it just as a normal guy behind a microphone.
But I think it's different. Joe's is that in sports? Joe's a fighter. Joe's an athlete, but he's a fighter athlete. So if you were to
martial
try
artist.
Martial art. I call it an athlete. No. Athlete, martial artist, whatever, athlete. But if you tried to transfer that over to something like to be a doctor, Joe couldn't be a doctor.
You say I couldn't?
Yeah, not, no.
I could. Why couldn't I?
Because you won't have that focus.
But it's me deciding that I don't want to be a doctor. I could do it if I wanted to.
Yeah, but that's the difference, though. That's like saying I could quit smoking if I wanted to.
Yeah, you can. It's a mindset.
Smoke, by the way. I'm just talking
all
about
I'd have
people.
To do is read more. I'd have to put my mind to it a little further. I'd have to, instead of training, if I put my mind, what I did in fighting into any career, I could have done whatever I wanted.
Absolutely, but anybody can. But there's something
absolutely.
In your head.
So why?
There's
that's what I'm saying. We get what you're saying.
There's something in your head.
You just insulted me. If I wanted to be a damn doctor, Cost, I would have been a doctor.
Hey, man, we can't all be perfect. Sorry. But that's the thing. There's that switch in your head that puts your mind to it that can have you that singular drive that you put into fighting that you can't put into certain other things.
I disagree.
Okay, go be an actor.
I will. If I wanted to, I could.
He's working on it.
I'm working on it. I just don't have a time issue. My time right now, I want to be the best dang commentator there is, and that's my focus.
Yeah, but you love commentating, and you're good at it. You put that singular focus into that, whereas you didn't put that focus into other things.
But we're saying if I wanted to, I could. Anyways.
This is where Joe and I get into it all the time, Costa. It's just like I can't wrap my head around it.
He can't wrap it either. It's just one. It's an intangible. It's that intangible that a champion has that you can't teach.
Like if I said to you, Costa, you know, you could be a great physicist one day. What would you say? What would you say about that?
Absolutely not.
See, the thing is with him. I'm more confident in him than he is.
But if I said it to Joe, Joe would be convinced that he could learn about physics and become like an astrophysicist if he wanted to in like 10 years.
I know Joe better than him. I know he can be. Joe could have been the UFC champion. Joe could have been bigger than GSP. Joe could have been the biggest UFC champion of all time because he had that athletic skill. He had that mental drive. But Joe loved kickboxing. That was his love. And that was something that if Joe trained for a couple of years, he would have been the biggest thing in the UFC. And I always said that not just as a friend or a coach. I can tell I've worked with athletes in every sport and I've seen what it takes for the best, and it's something different. It's something that you're born with. Again, working hard will get you to the top of your potential, but in the end, it's that genetic component, mentally and physically.
Yeah, like look what I just always look at John Jones. Look what he can do outside and still be this incredible athlete that stays focused on fight night and potentially be the best mixed martial artist.
He barely trained against Gustafson. They said like he barely did any training.
Yeah.
He's a freak of nature. It could have been the greatest of all time. He has some issues outside, but a lot of those issues that these guys have outside are because they're so singular focused. I was just watching a movie, Borg versus McEnroe, and you see
great movie.
Yeah, and then you see kind of the mental jail that these guys put themselves in the pursuit of greatness. Look at Michael Jordan. He said it's a blessing but a curse. He still now bets on games and everything's competitive because that competitive drive never leaves you. It's not something that's fun for them. It's just something inside them that forces them to be these high-level competitors. You put that with physical genetics, and you have a champion. But, again, you can't teach that. If someone's going to quit on the stool, they're not a champion unless, Roberto Duran might have been the example.
Costa, I hate to cut you off here, but what we're talking about is a great segue for our next two topics, so I'm going to let you go. But thank you for chiming in. We appreciate it.
All right, boys.
I'll talk to you soon, Costa.
Bye.
That was a good perspective.
Yeah. Now he's into it. He's really passionate, though, about it. I mean, he took his cornering very serious, and we're friends. And I think it's, like he mentioned, it's very hard for me to and my corner to see it because I wasn't that athlete who's ever been defeated that bad or been put in a situation like that. So
he just mentioned Michael Jordan, and I guarantee you if you ask Michael Jordan right now if he could beat LeBron James in one-on-one, he'd think he could. But
absolutely.
But Chuck Liddell thinks he could fight John Jones and hang with him. Chuck Liddell,
yeah, I know. That's
on Monday
that's
says he's coming out of retirement, age 48. He wants to do two fights, one of which he thinks is going to be against Tito Ortiz at the end of the year. And his main target is John Jones. Now, of course, this fight probably can never happen because of the whole, Jones is a UFC fighter. Not to mention that by the time that anything like this could be put together, Chuck Liddell will be 50 years old. Yeah, like when you see Chuck talking about it, he talks about it with the conviction that he's going to be able to do it. So I guess that's kind of the mindset.
Yeah, it is. It is a mindset. You can never, to put yourself on the top and to get to the top, you have to have that mindset. There's no questions about it. You can't think of another human being able to beat you. Like, people still laugh at me at Glory all the time. They're like, who would you want to fight up? Give me Rico. Yeah. Like the heavyweight champ. They're like, Joe, he's twice your size. That's fine. I said, there's no way. He's slower than me. I'm faster. My timing is better. I feel my low kick system in game is better. Give me the heavyweight champ, Aaron. Mm-hmm. That's the way I look at it.
That's just, yeah, that's just your thought process, that's right? It. Hopefully Rico doesn't find out about that.
I'll tell him. He knows. But he would expect that from me.
Right.
That's like me going to Rico, hey, Rico, go fight Anthony Joshua in boxing.
Yeah.
If you ask Rico if he'll beat Anthony Joshua in boxing, Rico will say, let's do it.
He wants to bring it
on.
Yeah.
Bring it on. Right. So that's the championship mentality.
By the way, Giga Chikadze signs in the UFC. Contender Series.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
The glory crossover is real, man.
Yeah, we're confident, man. Like, let's go over and let's make some noise. I'm excited for it.
So one other thing that that Costa said that was a good segue was about, and that you were talking about, was John Jones and outside of the cage, about distractions and things of that nature. Mackenzie Dern fails to make weight. She showed up to fight week at 139 pounds, reportedly, which is... 25 pounds above, maybe a little bit less than that, 23 pounds, I guess, above the strawweight cutoff, which is really impossible almost to cut that much weight as a female going down to a strawweight class.
Yeah.
Very difficult to do. It's a huge amount of your percentage of your weight. But, you know, the knock on her right now is that she's not taking things seriously. A lot of people, you know, reportedly she was asked to leave the MMA lab because she just wasn't showing up to practice enough and wasn't training hard enough. Wants to be at the beach and doing dancing and things like that instead of training. But she's got such natural gifts. You saw her against Cooper. She made it look like child's play.
The thing is with her, I think she's just, like, when you looked at her, I think everyone with this whole weight cut miss issue, it's seeing her body type after. When you see a fighter saying, I can't make weight, and you look at their body after, you're like, you got so much more weight to go and pull yourself from there. And they're talking about different weight classes. She could have lost a lot more. She's a naturally 115er. She just has to diet throughout her camp. She can't rely on her last minute.
She's got like a pretty thick density.
Yeah, but she can still take out some of that weight.
I think so too. And I think it didn't look like she was depleted. You know, a lot of people are asking if she should move up to flyweight. No, I don't think she should.
No, I don't think so.
I think that she'd be way too small for flyweight. You've got girls moving down from 135 that are way bigger than Mackenzie Dern fighting at flyweight now. Like, against Jessica Ai, she'd be tiny.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So when you look at her, if she can go to the UFC and she can get a good weight-cutting regimen, she's cut to 115 a couple times before. I mean, she's missed weight a lot, you know, several times as well. But she has been able to get down to 115. If she can walk around lighter, if she can cut the weight in a healthier fashion, that's where she should stay. That's her most competitive division. It would be at 115 because she'd be too, you know, a lot of people say, this person got so much weight, they, you know, why don't they just move up? But look at Gastelum. Like, Gastelum just beat Jacare, who most people have thought is, you know, a top three guy in the division for almost a decade. You know, he could probably make 170 if he was more disciplined, but he fights really well at 185 because he's, even though he's a little bit outsized, he's got a lot of different intangibles that give him an advantage, like his speed and his striking. It matches up well at 185, whereas if Mackenzie moves up to flyweight, I just think she'd be outsized by a lot of different competitors.
No, I agree. But what makes you, you know, the advantage of being heavier sometimes takes away skill. So if you have the skill, like Gaslam's obviously got the skills to be able to do well, but if he maybe has a physical presence of, you know, a natural guy, it could be harder for him. I mean, he's an exception, I would have to say.
I mean, I hope... You know, I don't want to say I hope that Whitaker wins, but I hope that Whitaker and Gastelum fight one day because I think that's a great matchup. I was saying, you know, I said over the weekend, I think Gastelum matches up really well against Whitaker, and a lot of people are like, oh, I mean, I don't think so. Whitaker's great. It's like, yeah, so is Gastelum.
Yeah.
You know? And they don't give him enough credit. Yeah,
they don't give him enough credit for what he's done.
Because you have to remember, Whitaker was also a 170 and then moved up to 185 and had success at 185. And he's a bit, like, he'll be smaller than Romero on fight night.
And who would you think would be the bigger natural middleweights? Chris Weidman? Who?
Yeah, and Weidman beat Gastelum.
Yeah.
But
who would be the bigger?
Rockhold, for sure, when he was there.
Yeah.
All of them, really. I mean, Jacare is probably, like, a perfect for 185, but Romero is like he's basically a light heavyweight. He walks around to probably like 230.
Yeah,
Weidman is huge. Weidman could easily move up to light heavyweight. Bisping was a light heavyweight for the most part. Like all of the middleweights at the top were big middleweights.
Yeah.
But now it's starting to change a little bit because you've got Whitaker as the champion. You've got Gastelum coming up. Paulo Costa's a big guy, but he's probably like a perfect 185er.
Yeah.
Machida has moved down from lightweight, but he looks a lot, you know, more fit at 185. So you're starting to see a lot of fighters that are kind of more natural for that weight class or even moving up.
Yeah.
These are the speed advantage.
Yeah. I don't know. It's it's interesting. Like, I'm more at the approach now of don't overcut. You know, you don't need to overcut. I mean, if you're overcutting, you're not doing your homework beforehand, which drives me nuts. We can go into it again, but it just drives me nuts.
Well, the guy I always bring up is Antonio Carlos Jr., who's had a lot of success at middleweight, but he won the Ultimate Fighter at heavyweight.
Yeah.
And his skill set, he's like a world champion jiu-jitsu guy. Like, who at heavyweight? You saw the Ezekiel choke again this weekend by Alexei Olenek. Like, if guys are tapping out to that, imagine what Carlos Jr. could do to some of these bigger guys. Like,
yeah,
if he could drag them down with his jiu-jitsu, like, you know, their takedown defense isn't great at heavyweight. Like, you know, a guy like Cain Velasquez's would be, and Cormier, guys with a big wrestling base in Stipe. But if you can drag guys down, like, he could go into heavyweight. He probably wouldn't have to train as hard, wouldn't have to cut any weight, and he could just destroy guys with his natural skill set. It boggles my mind that he wants to move down two weight classes when he could easily walk around at 230, 235, which is around what Stipe walks around at. You know, like, Stipe is probably about 240, 245. But at 230, 235, you're not going to be that outsized.
There's got to be some confidence issue where, like, oh, my God, that extra weight. As a striker.
Or maybe they don't like taking shots from guys that
big. Yeah, that's the other point. But the main thing is, if as a striker, if I would want to go to the lower possible weight class, because the heavier you are, that wrestling is going to be a big advantage. And that's where I think someone like Adesanya eventually could have problems in that middleweight division. Yes, his striking is good, but when you have a big, big middleweight grabbing you, trying to throw you to the ground, a wrestler, jiu-jitsu guy, that's exhausting having that extra weight on you. So as a striker, most strikers want to keep cutting down when they go in MMA. I know a lot of strikers, for example, who might fight welterweight in kickboxing, but they'll go to lightweight for MMA fights for that wrestling purpose. They don't want those heavier guys on them. So maybe that's the same thing for jiu-jitsu guys. They don't want a heavier guy punching them in the face.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, you know, from the ground or something of that nature. But, yeah, that's the thing that confuses me. Like, the weight class thing, again, I still think needs some tweaking. But at the same time, I think someone like Dern is an example of a person who should stay at strawweight. She's just, like, she would just be too small, I think, for flyweight.
But, my understanding, she's going to the UFC Institute. Yeah, they're going to keep an eye on her, hopefully keep
that's
her
what
structured.
They should do. And that's the smart move. And maybe she can train out there, too. There's a lot of good gyms out there. There's Extreme Couture, Syndicate. Stay out in Vegas and train there, and then you can train at the Institute as well.
Yeah, how old is she?
I think she's like 24, I believe.
Okay.
Or 25, sorry. She just turned 25, if I'm not mistaken. So she's still very young in her career, and I mean, she's probably the most celebrated BJJ practitioner to come into MMA, like if you look at all of her accolades.
Yeah, with the amount of jiu-jitsu matches she's been in. And
amount of golds. Golden absolute, like a win over Gabby Garcia, you know, like that kind of thing is crazy.
Yeah.
Speaking of lighter fighters fighting heavier fighters, one of your all-time favorites, Vitor Belfort, got front kicked into retirement, unfortunately, over the weekend.
I'll probably say my all-time overall, since I was a kid to now, my overall favorite.
And I'm looking back at his resume. Wins over Tank Abbott, Gilbert Ivel, Heath Herring, Randy Couture, like natural heavyweights that he was beating early in his career. He was fighting at middleweight at the end in the UFC, but what's your fondest memory of Belfort?
I want to say when he was a kid, the ultimate Brazil when he fought Vanderlei Silva. That was when he hooked me.
Mm-hmm.
And literally that's when he hooked me.
That was a crazy fight.
And I just went ballistic and I was like, this guy is the greatest thing. And from that moment on, I was Vitor all the way.
Yeah, all 44 seconds of that fight.
Yeah, it was just incredible for me. I reenacted that. I would show people, I would tell people that was the one that got me hooked to Belfort.
I think that's probably his most exciting moment in the cage. The thing that I remember most vividly with him is I was in attendance for this card. It was when he was against John Jones and had John Jones in, I believe it was an armbar. I think it was either an armbar or a triangle. And he
it was so close,
right? Basically snapped John Jones' arm and Jones continued to beat him. But he almost beat John Jones.
Yeah.
Like Jones dominated that fight. If you go back and watch it, like there was not really a minute where Jones wasn't in charge of that fight, except for that one moment, I think that was in the first round, where basically Belfort snapped Jones' arm and he continued.
Yeah. And even looking at his career, who was an easy fight for him? Has he ever been given
who knows back in the day? I don't know who Joe Charles is, but you know.
But at that time, it was probably a big heavyweight, you know, in those early times.
Let's go over the last, I don't know, let's go over just this decade. So you've got Anderson Silva, you've got Akiyama, who was a stud, but that's probably his easiest opponent of the last 10 years, but we really shouldn't forget how good
Akiyama
is. I don't
see one easy guy.
It's Anthony Johnson, who he beat. Anthony Johnson, after he missed weight. Speaking of Mackenzie Dern, he weighed at 197 for 185, 12 pounds over. And if you see Anthony Johnson in person, it's shocking that he ever made welterweight. The John Jones fight that we just talked about, head kick knockout against Michael Bisping, head kick knockout against Luke Rockhold, win over Dan Henderson, lost to Weidman, win over Dan Henderson again, lost to, then I guess the UFC started to institute the
TRT
USADA,
TRT
change, and then it was lost to Jacques Gray, lost to Musasi, lost to Gastelum, was overturned as a no contest, win over Nate Marquardt, and then a loss to Machida.
Yeah, but the easiest one would have been Nate Marquardt, probably.
Well, Marquardt was a champion, but, too. He was a Strikeforce champion, so I don't know. I mean, Akiyama and Marquardt probably, but those two are still like...
Akiyama at that time was great, big
borderline
name.
Top guys.
Yeah, so I mean, very impressive career.
And win over Rich Franklin on his resume as well, like, you know,
And crazy. Good to be to hear that will be in the Hall of Fame, which well-deserved, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, good for Vitor.
Probably, would you say one of the best careers? Who would you say had a... equally as
like
great
in terms
career.
Of resume,
yeah.
But John Jones beat a lot of top guys,
but I mean, newer age. You're talking someone from this length
you,
of time,
oh,
you
guys
in the
from
sport.
That era. I mean,
yeah,
Overeem's up there, like Overeem's still going. He's bought crazy guys. Nogueira
Chuck
has
Liddell,
bought a ton
Nogueira.
Of guys. Nogueira, yeah. Like if you're talking about the old school guys, I mean, I wouldn't even put Fedor there. I don't think Fedor's fought like, I mean, he's fought a lot of good guys. I shouldn't say that, but he's fought a lot of cans on his way up as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, one of the best anyways.
Yeah, absolutely.
All time.
So, farewell to Vitor Belfort. You know, he went out in spectacular fashion. Before. Same way that Couture went out. It's a retirement kick.
Yeah, and he left his gloves in there. Love that.
Yeah. You know? Although, would you be surprised if he showed up in, like, Ryzen in a year at some of those
I don't think Belfort's that guy.
No,
I
you don't think
know.
So? Okay.
I don't know. We'll see. I hope not anyways.
Because I don't think Ryzen would be have the same stringent testing, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I hope not anyways. I hope he's one of these guys that just... retires and is happy with his career.
Yeah, unlike Chuck Liddell now.
I know. And then Dana.
I really am. I mean, I will watch that fight, him and Ortiz, but I'm kind of squeamish about it. Like,
I heard Rampage. I heard it could be Rampage too, and it's going to be with Oscar De La Hoya Promotions.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
It just strikes me as odd.
Golden Boy, I mean.
Yeah. Golden Boy. Yeah, it's a very strange thing. So the UFC has officially announced they are doing a show in Russia. It's a fight night card, actually, in September in an arena in Moscow that holds about 16,000 people. Decided, I guess, not to do a pay-per-view. I don't even know if that was in the cards. That was the rumor. It was they were going to go to the stadium and do a pay-per-view. But once Dana started talking about Khabib fighting in Vegas for his first defense, it's kind of when you knew that fight probably wasn't going to be of the big scale. You can't really do a pay-per-view in Russia without Khabib on it.
Yeah,
but you'll probably see like Zabit on the card, Taisimov on the card, a lot of big, big Russian names.
Yeah, it'll be entertaining
fun card.
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. But they also appointed, I think, a bigger statement as a VP of Russia for the UFC, which shows that they're really going to be going to Russia quite a bit in the future and a real commitment to that area.
Well, I think based on the fighters and the quality of fights they're bringing, I think you really have to.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it was amazing how they did it with Canada, too, right? It all started with... we got the office here, and it just blew up here as well.
Absolutely. So if you look at every division, there's like a really good Russian fighter or Chechenian fighter or Dagestani fighter in every single one of them. So.
What's weird to me is Zabit, everyone keeps talking about how low he's ranked for the skill he has, right?
Well, I talked to Kamaru Usman about that in the interview later on, but there's one thing I actually forgot to write down here, which is the Yair Rodriguez getting released.
Yeah, that was insane.
Yeah, so I did want to talk to you about that, but I don't know. I think it's just trying to send a message to people, and
it's a bully. It's a bully move from the UFC.
It is, but at the same time, they're getting rid of like a marketable guy that could be like the champion in Bellator in a year.
Yeah, I think it's a stupid move from the UFC.
I mean, it's hard.
Giving him like tough fights. Like he wants to build his career too. If the UFC isn't going to build his career properly, he's trying to build it himself. What he's going to go fight the most dangerous guy in MMA right now when he's coming off of his loss.
The UFC's saying, well, this guy doesn't want to fight a lower ranked fighter. But again, the rankings are once again peering their ugly head because you know, and you'll hear this in the interview with Usman because I talked to him about it at length. But I feel like. The rankings are based on who people are beating rather than how they're beating them. Does that make sense?
I understand that.
Like for example, this weekend, let me grab any fight. So let's say Dominic Reyes beats Cannonier in 5 seconds. Like Cannonier's never been stopped in the UFC, other than by submission. He's never been knocked out. If he does that, should Reyes be like a top five light heavyweight? It's a thin division. Why not? If he's going through guys, beating them all in the first round, elevate the guy. Put him up there and then make people say, oh, this guy's ranked 5th. He isn't beating anybody. I want to fight that guy.
Yeah.
But instead, the rankings are like, oh, he beat Cannonier. Cannonier's ranked 13th, so now he's ranked 12th.
Yeah.
It's like, no. That shouldn't be how it works.
No, I can see that.
I spoke to somebody who did the rankings after, I won't name names, but after the Zabit's last fight, I said, are you going to rank Zabit? And he's like, no, he hasn't beaten anybody ranked. And I'm thinking, like, this guy's running, buzzing through guys, and you're not going to rank him because he hasn't beaten
I get both sides. I mean, the quality of opponent.
Usman hasn't beaten a ranked guy, and he's ranked 7th. But the reason why he's ranked 7th is because everybody's talking about how nobody's going to fight this guy.
Yeah,
nobody wants to fight him.
It's his outside mystique. Yeah.
So he's moved up in the rankings, but that's kind of the way that you're going to, that's the only way you're going to get these guys fights against ranked guy, like lower ranked guys, is by ranking them accordingly. And the way I think people should look at it is like, if these two were to fight each other, who would be the favorite?
Yeah.
Because Belfort was ranked 9th, Paulo Costa is ranked 12th. If Belfort fought Paulo Costa, I know Belfort's retired now.
Would beat him.
But let's say Costa was fighting him this past weekend.
Yeah.
The odds would be like 5-1 in Costa's favor, I'd say.
Yeah, easily.
But, and then,
but
is
he's
ranked lower.
Yeah, makes sense.
So why are we not basing it on performance rather than who? Like, rather than...
Yeah.
I don't know. That's the thing about the ratings that really grinds my gears.
Yeah. That's your sensitive topic.
It is. That's like my...
Yeah, that's how I get you going.
That's the beat that I'm on, is that the ratings beat. How we fix this system. But now, like, Yair Rodriguez is a casualty of that, in my opinion. Yeah. Because he's ranked higher than Zabit. Maybe it's justified, but who's he beaten? Like, Andre Fili is his best win?
Yeah, it's a good win, but
a very good win.
I mean,
the way he did it was crazy.
If I kind of like, if there's certain stars in your promotion, you have to give them almost the boxing model, right? The boxing model is
like the boxing model. Well, I really don't.
That's how you build a star. I feel
they're doing it with Mackenzie Dern, and that's fine.
Yeah, but do it with a Yair Rodriguez. He doesn't want to fight those big names.
They did, and then he fought Edgar, and Edgar destroyed him.
Look at that big jump, though. That's a huge jump.
It is a big jump, and you do need to take it slow.
And
with
he
some
probably
of these guys.
Wasn't ready for that. Now he's gun shy. He probably lost a lot of confidence, and now you're asking him to fight the most trickiest, you know, striker and best martial artist of this new generation, and he doesn't want it. He doesn't want 2 weeks.
You think this though. If you're a fighter, you're probably, like, you should be willing to fight everybody.
But
I
agree with that, but I think the mentality of it has changed. We're not in the just bleed era anymore.
Yeah.
Nobody just wants bleed. Everybody's understanding about CTE and concussions and brain injuries. People are a little bit more hesitant. They want to be smarter with their career, and I think that's a good thing what Yair did. Not just, you know, be the little puppet in this little, the pawn in the game of chess. No, stand up for yourself. I don't want to fight this. It's not a great move for my career. I want someone like this. You can't turn down everyone, but if Zabit's the guy and not the guy, you have to put a statement for it. But I get why he doesn't want to fight Zabit. Nobody really does right now.
Nobody does. So, I don't know how they're going to get him a fight. They just call Kyle Bochniak again and say, hey, you want to run it back?
You're going to have to give someone some good cash. Incentives.
Speaking of which, we got Demian Maia in the main event against Kamaru Usman, which I imagine cost the UFC a good chunk of change.
Yeah, that's how do you get him in there?
Yeah, I mean, Maia's ranked ahead of him, but if you look at the odds now, Usman's almost a 4-1 favorite.
Yeah, but if you think about it, the wrestling is the big difference, you know.
But here's the question with this particular fight, though: is like Usman doesn't have a win that's anywhere near a Demian Maia.
Yeah,
if you look at who he's beaten.
And apparently, like, Maia has problems with wrestlers, though, right? All of the guys he's wrestled with, he's had problems with.
Yeah, but he can't take them down, and his game is... But at the same time, like, with Maia in a 5-round fight, it's a lot of time to lose. You know, it's a lot of time to get caught by something by Maia.
Yeah.
And Maia has a path, but it's not a very good path.
Yeah, no, I really like Usman in this fight.
And then Tatiana Suarez and Grasso opened up as like almost even money, and the money came in on Suarez at such a massive pace that it's now almost 5-1.
Yeah, I know.
Which is interesting because Grasso's a good prospect. Suarez, I mean, the thing about what Suarez does is she's the best grappler at 115.
Easily.
And, you know, when you have wrestling as your base, that's what everybody's going
to rely on. Grasso's last fight was lost to Felice too, right?
Yeah, lost to Felice, but also she has a win over Randa Marcos. Actually, I can't remember if that was the last fight. It was one of those two. Maybe it is the Felice loss. But Grasso was favored against Felice. That's how highly people thought of Grasso.
Yes, 10-1 record. Her last fight was a win with Marcos.
Marcos, okay. Yeah. And that was a very controversial decision. I think it was a split.
Yeah, I thought, I ended up thinking
Marcos took her down
Grasso
four times
won.
In the fight.
Yeah.
So, and if Marcos is taking her down four times, and Marcos is a great, great grappler, don't get me wrong, but Suarez is probably an even better grappler.
So what's the odds on this fight now?
Tatiana's minus 470.
Wow.
It was like almost even. It opened up almost even.
And back
even
to your ranking situation.
Yeah, Suarez should be 12, top five.
Grasso is 9.
Yeah, but Suarez, based on what we've seen from her, should be top five.
Yeah.
And that's how I would rank her. There's one guy that does the rankings that I think that does it in a similar fashion, and that's there's a guy named Brian Heminger who works for a website called MMA Odds Breaker, and he's one of the people that does rankings. He's always had like Usman in like the top five, tops, you know, for like a year he's been ranking him that high, because he goes by, I guess, what my mentality is, which is rank them based on potential, based on performance, and not based on who they're beating.
So someone like Israel Adesanya, would you rank him in the top 10?
In the top 15?
Yeah, top 15.
Yeah, probably. Well, no, maybe not yet. Not yet, because he didn't win his last fight in really a dominant fashion.
Yeah, but his potential. He's one of those guys that you can kind of put in those situations, because I mean, there's a lot of heat.
The thing is, if he was number 15 ranked at middleweight right now, is Elias Theodoro.
Yeah.
If Elias was fighting Israel, I think Elias would be favored because of the wrestling. Because Elias is such a good grappler.
I like that fight, but I would put Adesanya as a heavy favorite.
Against Elias
is, you know, it's just
striking
based.
It's just
the
style,
right?
Contrast, though. And you saw Adesanya get taken. No, Elias isn't striking based. Elias is more
grappling. In most of his fights, you'll see him try to stay out long distance, use his kicks. Like, he tends to kickbox and then grind people against the cage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think with the movement of Adesanya, it wouldn't even go that far.
Yeah, it's very possible. Yeah. But again,
I like that fight.
It would be pretty close. Like, I think it would be pretty close. Because I think a lot of people would think that Elias would be able to just kind of grind him out.
Hmm.
If it was a five-round fight, maybe you
I don't know. I honestly would think Adesanya would come in as the favorite on that.
Well, we'll see. I think Adesanya might be favored against Tavares when that comes out. So that would be a good way of looking
and
at it.
Tavares is what, ranked ninth, right?
Yeah, around there.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But yeah, it's a very fair point. Very fair point. Like, maybe I'd rank him. I don't know. I'd have to look and see who's ranked there. I mean, now that Belfort's out of the mix, you've got another spot opening up.
Yeah. But the middleweight division is totally changing right now because
all the young guys are coming up.
Yeah, I saw a picture when they were showing how in 2019, you know, that half of the top 10 is gone or something
40,
like that.
Yeah. Well, Bisping is still ranked, but he's probably done.
He's retired. I'm understanding he's retired now. Because one of his eyes is gone.
It's
now,
been like
right?
that for a long time. Yeah. And he managed to win the championship.
Hey, one
even,
shot
even
away.
Under the circumstances.
They're like, hey, you're one shot away from going blind.
Yeah,
and
he has been for years. Yeah,
and he's still
kept going.
He still kept going.
Care. That guy's breathes different oxygen than most. So let's talk to Kamaru Usman now before we break down this UFC Chile card. He's joining us now in the TSN MMA show. He's in the main event. It airs on TSN2. The main card starts at 10 p.m. Eastern, and he joins us now in the TSN MMA show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
I'm now joined by the 7th-ranked welterweight in the UFC, Kamaru Usman, who's headlining UFC Chile this weekend against Demian Maia. It looked like it was touch and go for a while, finding you a ranked opponent, but you know what? It's going to sound weird, but congratulations. You finally found a ranked opponent that's agreed to fight you. What did it take, as far as you know, to get Maia to accept this fight?
That part I do not know, but I knew it was definitely rough for the UFC to find a guy that was willing to take this fight. You can find guys who are willing to take this fight with 3-4 months notice. And to find one with a month notice was probably even tougher. So I'm just thankful to the UFC, thankful to Demian Maia himself for giving me the opportunity.
Late last week, Yair Rodriguez was released from the UFC. He's refusing to fight Zabit Magomedsharipov. I know you guys share a manager at UFC 226. Do you think this is a positive sign for fighters like Zabit and yourself, you know, who ranked fighters have essentially refused to fight?
Absolutely. It shows that the organization now is stepping up and not willing to just let these fighters try to protect the ranking or go around the tougher fights. Because back in the day, it wasn't like that. You fought whoever the UFC told you were going to fight next. It wasn't, oh, I'm ranked number 5 or I'm ranked number 7. I'm not going to fight anyone, you know, that's ranked outside of the top 15 or anything like that. You know, so it does feel good to know that the organization is getting back to making those tough calls. Like, you know what, if you're not going to fight who we need you to fight, then, you know, you can't fight here.
You know, it's strange. After Zabit's last fight, I asked somebody who is one of the people that does the rankings. I'm not going to name names. I said, you know, are you going to rank Zabit now? And he said, no, not yet. He hasn't fought anybody ranked. And I thought to myself, when you see people performing like you were, like Zabit, you know, is against unranked guys, because you're not able to fight ranked guys, shouldn't that take precedence over beating someone, say, who's ranked but is, you know, kind of at the tail end of their career?
Absolutely. I mean, the point and the goal of this, I would like to think for everybody, is to become champion. And not just, I mean, some guys I know just like being a fighter, and that's, you know, they live in that world. But I got into this to be champion. So each fight that I take, I want it to be a fight that's going to elevate me towards that. And so if I'm performing and I'm going out there and getting those wins, I should be fighting a guy that's a step up, that's next up. So if the UFC is asking number 14 or 15 guy to fight someone like Zabit, and those guys are like, no, I'm number 15 in the world, I don't want to fight him. Yeah, then guess what? You're losing your spot, because this is a guy that's continuously winning. He's on the roll. Obviously, he's showing the UFC something to why they want him to fight a ranked opponent. And so if you're not willing to give them that chance to move up, then, hey, you should lose that spot.
You know, it's awfully strange. I saw that Vitor Belfort, I believe, was ranked 9th over the weekend. If you were to put him against Paulo Costa, who's ranked 14th, Paulo Costa, I believe, would be a huge favorite in that fight. Yet Paulo Costa's ranked below him. I feel like skill level doesn't really even play a factor. It's like who you've beaten and who you're going to fight.
Yeah.
It's not a knock on Belfort.
Well, no, it's not. I wouldn't say skill level. I think with those odds, it's based on gambling odds. Like, so, you know, they want to let people know that this is what you're capable of. This is what we've seen him do. So this is why we think he's going to be the favorite, because he can wrestle really well, or he can strike really well, and he's fighting a guy that can't strike as well. So that's why we're going to put him as the favorite. And so, yeah, those guys see your abilities. They see certain things, because then sometimes you'll get a guy that's ranked higher than someone, and the other guy's the favorite or heavy favorite. In all my fights, I've been the favorite, and I've fought guys that were ranked ahead of me. So, you know, that really doesn't make that big of a difference.
Yeah, well, you mentioned that, and you actually opened up for this particular fight as just under a 2-1 favorite. Now you're more than a 4-1 favorite. Does it bring you any comfort to know that people have been watching you and feel that you are that much more skilled than one of the top fighters in the division?
No, I don't really care. I don't look at those things. My job is the same. It's to go in there and dominate from start to finish. That's what I aim to do. I never look at the odds or look at the this and that. I'm not gambling. I don't care about that. You know, my job is to win, because at the end of the day, and this is something that I learned before getting into this sport, is what my mentor told me, Sugar Rashad Evans. When you win, you win with everyone. You win with your fans. But when you lose by yourself. At the end of the day, everybody has to go to work the next day. They have to do their job. They might be sad with you that night. Oh, man, you lost. Well, guess what? Life goes on for them. You have to sit at home and bask in that defeat. You got to ice your eye that's swollen, that's cut, or things like that. So at the end of the day, you lose by yourself. But when you win, everyone, of course, is along for that ride.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. Amanda Cooper actually posted on Instagram today that she went and ate lunch by herself today just because it was something she hadn't done before, and she enjoys being alone so that she can reflect. And she kind of took that time to reflect on her loss and looked at pictures of herself in Brazil, you know, having a good time, getting to experience what she's experiencing, and thought, you know, if this is the lowest point of my life, I'm doing something really well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the highs are high, don't get me wrong, but the lows are low. This sport is so unforgiving. The lows are very low, because you have to experience that by yourself. When you get into this, you get in to compete. I know for the guys that are trying to compete, you get into this to compete. You get into it to win. You want to be the best at this. So when you get flat, and it's one-on-one, you can't blame this on anybody else. It has nothing to do with anyone, because you could control as much as you can control inside that octagon. So when you lose, or you lose in a fashion that she did, it takes something out of you. It takes a piece of you. And so, yeah, sometimes you just need that alone time to just soul search and you know, maybe figure out the mistakes or whatever. Just reflect on it.
You know, speaking of which, your brother actually lost for the first time in his career last month. Have you been speaking with him, and what's he learned from that experience?
Yeah, I was actually there for the fight, and I cornered him. And, yeah, he lost. Of course, you know, he never felt nothing like that. And not just that, you know, my brother is a football player.
Yeah, he came from football.
He came from football. So he's been competing in team sports for a very, very long time. And that's what he's, you know, where he's been at. That's what he's been used to, accustomed to. He is not someone who's equipped to deal with it as much as I am, because I've been wrestling for over 400 matches in my amateur career, to where I know what it's like to lose wrestling matches and be able to bounce back right away and right that wrong or reflect on that. I know what that feels like. He doesn't. And so, of course, he's disappointed. He tasted defeat for the first time. And because when you get start out and then you start out the way he did on the roll like that, you feel invincible. And then when you take that first loss, it takes a lot out of you. And you have to be able to have the courage to mentally and physically correct some of those mistakes that you made, get back on that horse, and keep trucking. So, yeah, we spoke. You know, I let him know that he was going to be okay. I let him know that, hey, you know, you learn a lot. You're going to learn a lot from this, because had he won the fight, he might have not saw some of the mistakes that he was making during the fight. And so, yeah, you know, losses aren't necessarily the worst things for you. Sometimes they could be the biggest helpers that you have. So that's just how he's feeling right now.
No, Damian's actually lost two in a row to fighters that I guess have similar skill sets to you, wrestling base with better striking than him, at least on that night, in Tyron Woodley and Colby Covington. Do you feel like the blueprint for defeating Damian Maia is kind of readily available now?
I felt it's not necessarily, I'm not going to say it's necessarily based on those guys. I thought I've had it for 2 years, because I called out Damian Maia 2 years ago. I called him out 2 years ago when he was sitting next to me before losing any of these fights. I think he was staring down a title shot. And so, you know, it is what it is. I've thought that I could beat him for years now, and now I just get the opportunity to show it.
It seems like a lot of people are kind of dodging you when you confront them in person. I guess back in Brooklyn, you were part of the press conference that had a lot of banter between yourself and Colby Covington. I was backstage for that, so I kind of had a front row seat, but it almost seemed like the two of you were going to be fighting when it came to that press conference. Why is he someone that you've been targeting specifically?
I mean, he's just the punk of the sport, you know, and it's funny, man. I feel like that's the situation. That's somebody that it's destined for me to fight or compete against. It goes back years and years and years before I really even knew him. You know, when I saw some certain things unfold to where I started putting two and two together, we have more in common than he realizes. And, you know, this is just destiny. And this is the one guy in the division that it doesn't matter where I'm at. When I'm around him, when I see him, my heart rate goes up. I can't explain it. My heart rate just goes up. It's like when you know you're in elementary school, you know you're gonna get in a fight at the end of school, and you're scared and you're upset or your heart rate is gonna beat fast. You feel something, and it's just something about this guy. When I am around him, I feel that. I can't control it. Like, all that banter wasn't planned. It was just, I was there and I just felt it, and it just came out.
You've never run into him at like Aventura Mall or Sawgrass or anything like that, have you?
Oh, man, that was the thing. I've never ran into him. Never. I've been in South Florida 5 years. I never ran into him. And we have mutual friends. That's what's crazy about it.
So you guys don't go out to clubs or anything like that, I imagine, with your mutual friends?
I have, but I haven't seen him.
He's sick
him
that night?
What?
He's sick on those particular nights, I guess? Not feeling well?
Yeah, I think he's sick at home drinking some chicken noodle soup or something, you know, trying to nurse himself back to health.
All right, well, another fight coming up in your division, obviously, is him and Dos Anjos. But there's also Darren Till and Stephen Thompson. That's coming up in 2 weekends from now in Liverpool, Till's backyard. Till has mentioned you by name before as a future opponent because he wants to fight the best guys in the division, and he obviously puts you in that category. Do you think that with a win over Maia, that fighting the winner of that fight would be the next kind of natural fit?
Let's be honest. It looks that way. Because if you look at the guys that are above us or around us, no other fight really makes sense. Till's on a roll. He hasn't lost in a while, and he looked good. He looked impressive. I haven't lost at all in the UFC. I've won every round, dominated every minute of every round. And you've got someone like Wonderboy who continues to beat up everybody that's not Tyron Woodley. And then, you know, you've got RDA who's on a nice little streak, and you've got Kobe who's on a streak as well. So, you know, it's just us five that's kind of sitting in those – or us six that are sitting in those positions. And so, yeah, I mean, let's be honest. It looks like that might be the next fight, but you never know. I mean, the UFC knows the direction they want to go with their company and what they want to do. So I've learned to kind of shut down expectations in that department.
Well, let's just hope that they sign the paperwork like Damian Maia did for this weekend. We look forward to watching you fight again, Kamaru. The main event, UFC Chile. You can catch it on TSN up here in Canada. We appreciate your time.
Oh, man, I appreciate you guys, man. And I like everything that you guys are doing up there.
That was Kamaru Usman, who's in the main event of UFC Chile. He's taking on Damian Maia in the main event. And like I said, I think Maia is an interesting matchup here for Usman. I mean, he's a higher-ranked opponent. And if you look at Usman's resume, his best win is against, maybe Sean Strickland or Worley Alves, both guys that just fought at UFC 224. Strickland lost.
Mr. Aaron Bronstetter being nice again. I like it.
What do you mean?
Well, you're giving the big underdog a chance. I like it. We talked about that last time.
It's not a bad matter of being nice. It's a matter of X's and O's. I Maia has caught a lot of guys in tricky situations, and all it takes is one with him. You know, it's a 5-round fight. To write off Damian Maia would be a massive mistake. This is a tough opponent for Usman. Don't get it twisted. I mean, the problem is, and the reason why I think the line's so high, is if you look at Maia's last two fights, it's similar fighters. It's like Woodley with a wrestling base and better striking than Maia, Covington with a wrestling base and better striking than Maia, and now Usman with a wrestling base and better striking than Maia.
Other than that, he's got a pretty good win streak, right, before
yeah,
those?
Yeah, he had won like 7 in a row or something along those lines. So, yeah, to write off Damian Maia, I think, would be a big mistake in this fight. And then in the co-main, I think Grasso, if she can keep it standing, and obviously against Suarez, that's the goal for any fighter, she has a shot on the feet, but, she's in tough because Suarez is a grinder. Like, Suarez is going to take her down and I think dominate this fight on the ground. But I don't really want to write Grasso off because she's such a good prospect.
Yeah.
And her striking is getting better and better. But it's just that's a tough climb, tough hill to climb.
Do you see Suarez as a future champion?
Very possibly.
Yeah.
Because her style, like she was like basically a borderline freestyle Olympian, and I think she got cancer and had to undergo cancer treatments, and that kind of derailed her Olympic hopes. But she's like very high level.
Yeah.
And when you look at that kind of grappling, it just doesn't really exist outside of maybe like a Carla Esparza in that division, and Claudia Gadelha is a good at submission grappling, but in terms of getting takedowns, Suarez has got to be the best of the division.
Yeah.
And in a 3-round fight, you know, where you're not really ever in a lot of trouble on the feet against anybody because the power's not really there at strawweight.
Yeah. And especially with Rose as the champ, striking based.
I'll tell you this,
wrestling.
Though. If Suarez was going to fight Jessica Andrade, taking Andrade.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
going to be hard to get past
top.
That.
Yeah, like you look at Joanna, you look at Andrade, you look at Carolina, you look at Rose, obviously the champion, and then of course you also look at Gadelha. I don't want to write her off just yet, and even Esparza.
Tisha Torres too.
Yeah, Tisha Torres. Felice is still very good, yeah. Despite the loss
but
to Carolina.
Good potential, regardless.
Yeah. So Suarez, I still think Suarez could beat a lot of the girls that I just named, but. We'll have to see in time, and I think Grasso is a very good level of opponent for her to fight as a next step up. Dominic Reyes versus Jared Cannonier. Now, Reyes has been running through guys in the UFC, former safety in football, crazy athlete, but Cannonier is a tough opponent here. Like, this one, to me, is where a line where it's a little bit off.
Yeah, it's tough because Cannonier is a good striker.
He's a very good
very
striker.
Very good striking, but... Reyes has a lot of potential coming behind him. There's a lot of, you know, so it's a tough fight. I mean, can he withstand the power of Jared, you know?
I mean, the thing that's scary about Reyes is, like, you see his fights have only been in the first round, but as a former football player, you know that the cardio is there. Like, you know that he'll have 3 rounds of cardio as a former safety.
Yeah.
Like, all you're doing as a safety is running. You know? So that's, you know, I do think Reyes is probably the deserved favorite, but this is a pretty steep price.
Yeah, the killer gorilla.
Some other things that stand out on the card, Andrea KGB Lee has her debut. She's a pretty big favorite in her fight. Chad Labrie is a pretty sizable underdog against Vicente Luque. Luque has a lot of upside in my eyes. I think he's coming off a loss to Leon Edwards, if I'm not mistaken, but he's a very good fighter.
Yeah, I was sparring with, my business partner, Troy Sheridan, and my main guy, he's fighting in Glory July 20th. He's fighting in a 4-man tournament. And Chad, we brought... we went down to spar with Chad for this camp. So
oh, cool.
We got to see and work with Chad. He looked good. He looked sharp on his feet. They had some good sparring rounds. So I'm hoping to get more work with Chad after this fight. I think I'm going to pitch something to him to come get some more work with me.
So if he's your pick, we know that there's a strong bias there, is what you're saying.
Probably, yeah. That's what I'm leaning towards. Yeah. I think because he might be an underdog in this fight.
He is. He's plus 170. Yeah, plus 175, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just from seeing him work, but he might have a sneak preview of my pick.
All right. We'll have to get that towards the end of the show. Zach Cummings, Prezeris. Now, Prezeris finally moving up to, welterweight because he kept missing weight at 155. He'll be very outsized against Cummings. He's one of the bigger welterweights. But, Prezeris is one of those guys where every fight, I'm like, oh, this is a tough one for him. And he always
wins. Yeah, because you just look at him.
Yeah, just the shape of him.
He's
small and stumpy, but he's a great fighter. So
yeah, he's only got two losses. Great record. Yeah. 24 wins, two losses.
Yeah, fantastic record. Yeah.
I mean, who has his losses been? Kevin Lee Thiago. Paulo Thiago.
Paulo Thiago, yeah. Well, that was probably a long time ago, I'd imagine.
That was 2013.
Yeah, he hasn't been around for
and
a while.
And his loss to Kevin Lee was 2015.
Yeah, and I think both by decision, is that right?
Decision, yeah.
So he's never been finished. So, Cummings is a hard hitter. He's a big guy, but Prezeris will definitely have a speed advantage. Moreno and Pantoja, it's a rematch from The Ultimate Fighter. Pantoja submitted Moreno last time. Pantoja a small favorite against Moreno, but Moreno's evolved a lot since that last fight. I think back then, if you looked at who was picked where, I think Pantoja was the first pick and Moreno was the last pick. And if you look at what the line is here, it's pretty much almost an even money fight.
Yeah.
It goes to show how much growth Moreno's had. Yeah, so that's an interesting one to me as
Moreno
well.
Moreno does well. I like his style.
Yeah, for sure. And there's a lot of other good fights with different fighters from Latin America. Humberto Bandanai had a great debut. I think he's from Uruguay or Paraguay, one of the two. And he looked fantastic in his debut, so we'll see how he looks in his second fight against a much tougher opponent than Mowgli Benitez, who just came off a big win over Jason Knight in his own right.
Yeah, I have a friend on the Fight Pass fighting, Henry Briones.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's...
He's an older guy.
Yeah, he does Glory, the Latino side of Glory.
Deportes.
Deportes. He does he's the color guy for Deportes.
So were you just with him this weekend?
No, he doesn't go to the Euro event. Okay. So I saw him last time in California.
I was going to say, it's pretty close to fight though.
yeah. But I've seen him, they don't come as much with us anymore. But, 2 years ago, I was with Briones probably every show.
Mm-hmm.
We hung out. We got pretty close.
Cool.
Yeah, very cool.
We'll see how he does. This is a must-win fight for him, for sure.
Absolutely.
He's a tough opponent.
But he's got that mentality. He fights anyone, anytime. Like he takes big, tough fights. So.
Yeah, well, this is a tough one for sure. Let's go to our next guest. Now, this is someone who you've worked with in the past, who I've worked with in the past. He's got a very telling and, transparent and honest, truthful documentary coming out called The Bipolar Rock and Roller about his life with bipolar disorder, and I've watched the trailer, and it looks like there's some pretty heavy stuff in there.
Yeah.
And we're looking forward to that. It's actually going to air in Canada on the Movie Network, and Mauro will tell you more about that during this interview as he joins us now on the TSN MMA show. I'm joined now by a man whose show I used to produce, a dear friend of mine, Mauro Ranallo. I saw Mauro back at Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather, one of the biggest combat sports events ever that he called, and it was a record-breaking event, and seeing Mauro was great. It's been a long time, Mauro, and it's great to have you on the show.
Hey, Aaron. The fact we lost you as the producer of my show is the fact I don't do it anymore. See, you go and
the whole house fell down.
My career has never been the same. My career has never been the same, my man.
Well, it's gotten better, if that's what you mean.
It's good to talk to you, bro. Thank you.
Well, you know what? One thing that John Pollock said in the documentary is... you expect the best from the people you work with. And that was why I loved producing your show and why it was a challenge. Is I knew that I had to raise my game to a certain level in order to hang with you because you're someone who really demands perfection and expects perfection. And I love that. I love being challenged in that way. And I think that's why we got along so well.
Yeah, and you know what? I also understand at times because of my highly competitive nature, and yes, I am a perfectionist. I'm my own worst critic. I will not ask anyone to do what I myself am not willing to try to do. But I know at times, I could blow a gasket and not to make any excuses or something. But I think at times my illness reared its ugly head in some of those instances. But you were a treat, and I appreciate, you saying that. Because honestly, I think that's what we should all aspire to in any workplace. You want to raise your game, and you want to be the best that you can be. And for me, I only want to be surrounded by those who have the same mindset. So it was, again, a pleasure to work with someone as as much of a consummate pro as you are, and I'm happy to see that you've also been able to, you know, increase your profile, and you're doing great work.
Well, thank you. I do appreciate that. Well, the reason we're having you on is Bipolar Rock and Roller. There's going to be a screening and benefit in Toronto at the Regent Theatre on Sunday, May 27th, if you'd like to meet Morrow. And another person I worked with, Michael Landsberg, is going to be doing a Q&A with you. And the Movie Network will be carrying the documentary on May 25th at 10 p.m. on TMN2. So people that are in Canada will get to watch Bipolar Rock and Roller. So my first question for you, really, Morrow, is, has this been difficult for you? This is obviously a side of you that you've been very forthright about. But now you've kind of had to relive a lot of the different situations that you've had to go through, a lot of the different incidents you've had to go through with yourself, and really lay it out there for everybody to see. And you're doing a lot of interviews about the subject. Has that been tough?
Yeah, I would say it is. But, Aaron, it's not any more tougher than every day is, and I can't overstate that. You know, you say you talk about me reliving certain things in my life. Unfortunately, or, you know, and I know everyone has a cross to bear, everyone has a story to tell, and they believe me, millions of people are way worse off than I am, that's for sure. But I relive everything almost daily, and that is the struggle for me. The fact that I maybe am as successful as I am in my work is because, in many ways, broadcasting is my therapy. Broadcasting is where, as you mentioned, you know, you say, I expect the best of everyone. Well, I know that live TV, there is no net. There's no take two. I know I'm going to be scrutinized and criticized and put under a microscope. So for me, the feeling of preparation and the feeling of knowing what's at stake in many ways is therapeutic. So it is tough, but honestly, it is just another day. And that is why I wanted to all of what you see in the documentary on display, because really it is what I deal with on a daily basis.
Were you worried about how people would perceive you after watching this, or that doesn't really matter to you? Like you said, you've got other things that go on in your daily life.
Yeah, no. And to be, you know, and I have been told many times, and it's almost, you know, I appreciate it, I guess, to a degree, and I can understand it, but I, you know, people say I'm courageous, people say I'm brave. I get that, but it's not, I don't feel I am. I don't know why, but because I lived with it most of my life, or going on close to 30 years, it was not difficult because that is who I am. And if there was going to be a backlash in terms of my professional career or in society or with family or friends, then so be it. I've said this in other interviews, and I, you know, I'm willing to be that casualty for the cause. I'm not saying I want to be a martyr by any means, but If I were to lose a job because of this, then I don't need that job. And truthfully, the support that I've received from my employers, and that's the amazing thing for me, whether it's Showtime, which has been my family, the longest tenure of any job I've ever had, 11 years now with Showtime Sports, has been an immense blessing. And what Steven Espinoza, David Dinkins, Gordon Hall, my broadcast partners, the entire crew, the PR, everybody, we are family, and they have been 100% supportive of this project. And WWE and Bellator and Paramount Network, I, unlike a lot of people, have incredible support. And that's another reason why I wanted to do this documentary, is to show what can be possible if you actually have a support network, if you actually try to help yourself, because at the end of the day, we all have to. But what I've noticed is too many people are killing themselves because of the stigma associated with mental health and the fact that they feel ashamed, or they've been told that you're a loser, you're lazy, you're just manipulating us, snap out of it. You're just looking for attention. It crushes my soul when I hear about the Hollywood executive, who unfortunately the name escapes me, but who was embroiled in that the Weinstein scandal here, where she got caught up in the crosshairs, but really was not culpable at all, and because of the intense pressure and scrutiny, and she was suffering from bipolar disorder, and she has a family. A young family, she ended up killing herself. I've had friends. I know more than one man who has committed suicide because of mental health issues, where they felt there was no hope. There was no one to reach out to. And we have to do better as a society in the medical institutions and our governments, where we have to put way more resources into mental health care. God, you know, many loved ones and friends to that incredibly insidious disease. But I'll tell you something. We are losing millions of people to something that while there is no cure, and that's what also makes it frustrating, we really don't even know the true cause, whether it's a chemical imbalance, whether it's a product of your environment, your diet, if it's hereditary. Well, you know, I'm very aware that it runs deeply into my mother's side. I have another cousin who's an amazing chef, a brilliant restaurateur in Vancouver, who suffers from bipolar disorder. So what I'm saying is we need to raise more awareness, more resources, and we need to be more compassionate and understanding as a society, especially men, Aaron. We are losing way too many men to something that you can be saved, and all it takes is love and understanding.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that working for Bell, I've always been so proud of Bell Let's Talk Day because it does further the conversation.
Amazing.
You know, I've been a sufferer of anxiety disorder. I know Joe's not with me right now, but my co-host on this show, Joe Valtellini, he's been very open about depression and why he stepped away from kickboxing as a result in terms of brain chemistry, things that you mentioned. When you were growing up, though, I'm sure that when you learned about having bipolar disorder, you might have thought that it was going to be something that would prevent you from getting to high levels. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that 52 years ago today, Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys, one of the greatest albums ever recorded, came out.
You're the man, Aaron.
Yeah, and Brian Wilson.
To bring that, brother.
Yes, and Brian Wilson, one of the most present, I guess, visible sufferers of bipolar disorder, something that's been written about at length. When you heard about, you know, individuals like him, Kurt Cobain, Jimi Hendrix, that they had suffered from manic depression or bipolar disorder, as they call it now, was that something that really inspired you to say, you know what, this is not something that's going to prevent me from genius, from brilliance?
Yeah, at first, I like everybody else, I actually told the doctor to F off, and I literally got angry at my family and everyone who brought me to the hospital, and what is this? How dare you? How effing dare you say that I've got issues? You guys have the issues. What do you mean I have issues? I'm working. I've got energy. You guys are always tired. I'm doing stuff. I'm the greatest. You know, like you, I had that self-inflated sense of self because of the mania. I was unaware of what was actually going on. So it took me, like it does for millions of us, and that's another issue that I think will help or be brought to awareness here. We need to better recognize people's symptoms, and that goes for every one of us, and the symptoms can manifest in different ways. But for me, the epic highs and lows in a period of time that could be as easy as a couple of moments. I'll never forget my girlfriend. I'd be so happy and looking forward to getting to the club that I was working at as a DJ to see my girlfriend for the first time that day. I was all excited. And she, you know, hey, honey, how are you? Like, I couldn't believe what was coming out of my mouth at times. And I realized, okay, there's something going on here. And then the debilitating lows. And so the more research I did, because I finally decided to say, okay, what is this crap? I found myself going, wow, I could have written every word. Excuse me. And then when I find out, like you do, the amount of, you know, incredible artists or amazing human beings on this planet who have been touched by madness, as Robin Williams once eloquently put it, and another icon that we lost due to mental health issues. And so when I read about these individuals, and I knew I was always different from a young age. I knew there was something about me, and everyone said the same thing. Like, you know, I was reading at a very early age. I was, I guess, quite intelligent for my age group, and yet hypersensitive, prone to crying James. I was always brought to the hospital emergency many times with stomach issues that nobody knew really what was causing them. I realized at a young age that we were going to die. Like, when I say that, I mean 5 and 6, I was obsessed with death and wondering how old, I was going to be when I lost my parents. So some really deep and you know, confusing stuff that manifested itself in this form, Aaron. So I was inspired when I finally realized who I was. I embraced it. I called myself the bipolar rock and roller, and for many people it was just a cool nickname as a DJ, or, oh, ain't that funny, because yeah, you are kind of crazy, you're kind of wild. And yet I would look them in the eyes and go, well, actually I am bipolar. the look on their face and the expressions, and I saw the uncomfortable, people being uncomfortable and not knowing what to say. And I realized that then, this is going back 28 years, that, wow, this is an issue. And then when you find out about the suicide rate and also what I was dealing with myself, and I know why you want to commit suicide. The toll this takes on your loved ones, Aaron. So I knew within a few years of my diagnosis that I needed to do something more. Otherwise, not only was I going to probably die, but I might even take some loved ones with me because, you know, family, man, they it's when you don't understand and you see a loved one, you know, in a hospital bed, just hopeless and helpless, it's a pretty tough feeling. And see, a lot of people who suffer from mental illness also are empathetic, and I'm one of those people, and I feel people's pain. I can pick up people's emotions when they enter a room, so I got the double whammy in that regard. But and that's why I want to show the world the ugliest side of mental health, because there's also a beautiful side to it, and I'm here today because of that, and I just want to help save a life, my friend.
Yeah, no, I hear that, of course. And, you know, in the documentary, I really felt your mother's pain when she was talking about it. I mean, your parents are immigrants from Italy, and I'm sure that growing up in the old country, they probably didn't talk about mental illness. In fact, that's laid out in the documentary. So, you know, what they had to go through as well as what you were going through must have been extremely hard for you, because you feel like you're putting something on them. And I'm sure that was part of it as well.
Yeah, my mom, of course, means everything to me. People often wonder, where did Mamma Mia come from? It's my mom in Italian, and it's a tribute to her because she's been with me every step of the way, and she is probably the toughest fighter I have ever seen. The myriad health issues that she's endured, she's not even 70 years old yet, from losing an eye at a young age to going through the trauma of losing her only two brothers when they blew up as teenagers stepping on a landmine in Italy, and my grandmother having to go pick up their body parts in order to bury. So again, you know, oh my God, we all have these stories, Aaron, all of us. The reason, and people go, well, why are you putting it out there? It's nobody's business. And no, but it is everyone's business if it's going to come to trying to help people. And even my poor mother, who to this day still suffers and struggles, I see her fight. And that's the other part of this, is the family, the impact, and just the understanding. You may never get it. I still don't totally get what the hell this is, but I know it's real, and I know it's costing people their lives. So why not raise more awareness? We need smarter people than me to use their time to study mental health issues, and they're doing it. And I want to thank NAMI, National Alliance of Mental Illness. But again, as you mentioned, a huge major thank you to Bell Let's Talk. I am so proud to be a Canadian and to see how much impact that has had globally. It's incredible. And even Michael Landsberg, who, again, one of my peers, who is an amazing and talented broadcaster, who is himself has had to deal with lifelong issues and you know, head of the hashtag Sick Not Weak movement. We have so many soldiers and warriors in this cause, and we're seeing it with DeMar DeRozan and Kevin Love in the NBA, and Logic, the hip-hop artist, and many more hip-hop artists. Demi Lovato, the great talented singer. It's happening. The timing is now. So let's hope that this has become something that will not be stigmatized much longer, and that we can save people from themselves.
You mentioned you don't think that you're brave for coming forward with this, and that's something that Landsberg has also said. But, you know, having worked with both of you and having worked with Michael, you know, the one thing that he is and that you are is powerful. And the reason I say that is there would be times I'd be sitting at my desk when I was working on Off the Record with Michael, and I'd listen in to his office, and he was on the phone. He'd be on the phone for 20 minutes, and I'd go in afterwards, and I'd say, "Who was that?" And he'd go, "I don't know, but it's somebody who wanted to call and talk to me about their mental health and their mental illness." And by making himself available, and I know how you make yourself available on social media to anybody who wants to reach out to you. You'll give them your email address. I believe your DMs are open on Twitter. If anybody needs help with what they're going through, you have the power to help them if they don't have a support system. And Michael has the power to help them. And that's one thing that I really applaud
both of you for. But Aaron, honestly, I appreciate that. But Aaron, we all have the power. We really truly, and you just said it, social media, my man. I remember when my mother was hospitalized Christmas night last year, and that was an incredible tough time for me. because I just arrived. I hadn't seen them in months, and go home for Christmas. And the day I get there, she has to be rushed to hospital in an ambulance. And I remember being in a hospital bed inside, and I just tweeted out. I just said, I need good vibes right now. And I don't know why I did it, but I just felt doing it. And the amount of support and feedback from total strangers, it really helped me get through that night. And so to think that we can use those tools. So all of us, I know what you're saying, and I agree, and I applaud Michael Landsberg and everyone else with a profile or the celebrity, but we all have the power to help. That's what makes this so incredibly frustrating and yet so emboldening at the same time. You know, we can, you can help. We all have power. We have a voice.
Absolutely. And Mauro, I could talk to you forever about this because it's a subject I'm particularly passionate about. And I like you said, I really think that we need to get the message out there as much as possible. You know, there are a lot of people probably back in the day that just didn't even know what they were going through, and they didn't have an outlet or anywhere to go. And you mentioned social media and how important it is. And well, I want to thank you for your time. I know that that you've had a very busy day of doing these interviews. I also do want to mention once again that on Sunday, May 27th, you can meet Mauro at the Regent Theatre, 551 Mount Pleasant Road in Toronto. They'll be doing a screening, a Q&A moderated by Michael Landsberg. And, of course, Frank Shamrock will also be in attendance, as well as Harris Usanovic, who is the director.
Yeah, I want to – yeah, Harris, sorry to interrupt, Aaron. I know we've got to go. But Harris Usanovic, and you know – but I, you know, he needs as much credit and as I do for this kid who I met when I went to the Fight Network in 2006, 15 years younger than me, but a Pride fan, and watched me call him Muay Thai on SN. So he was kind of, you know, he thought it was cool, Mauro Ranallo was working with him and stuff, but we became fast friends, and he spent more time with me socially than anyone else when I was in Toronto, and he saw what my real life was like, and he was the one that broached the subject for stood how sensitive it was and how uncomfortable it could be, but he knew what I went through, and he thought we could make a difference. So as much as, yeah, I'm the guy in front of the camera and bearing my soul, I could not have done this without Harris Usanovic. And he did the majority of this. Showtime came on board and helped to put the bells and whistles and, of course, giving us the platform. But Harris shot, edited, traveled, put his own money into this. He's raising a young family. So, you know, I just want to say thank you and God bless. One of my closest friends.
Yeah, Harris.
Much better than anybody.
Harris did a wonderful job of really capturing what you go through, and it's great that you gave him, I guess, a peephole into your soul, so to speak. It, you know, the ability to see what you go through and really share that with everybody. He did a fantastic job. The amount of footage in this is unbelievable, and you can see for yourself on TMN2, May 25th at 10 p.m. in Canada. I'm really glad that this got Canadian distribution. I imagine it'll probably be on Crave TV afterwards as well for people who want to watch it on demand. I don't know that as a fact, but usually when something from Showtime and TMN is aired, it does go on demand. So hopefully that is the case, because this is something you should absolutely watch. And if you have loved ones that suffer from mental illness, and chances are you do, this can only be a helpful resource. And I do want to thank you, Mauro. I appreciate your time. I could talk to you forever, and hopefully we can catch up again soon.
I'm very proud to call you a coworker, a peer, but more importantly, a friend, Aaron. And thank you for your interest. And again, even for you, my man. You know, we're always busy. I know everyone's got too much on their plate, but anytime, just drop a text or a DM or anything saying, "Hey, I'm not doing that great." Well, we'll have a quick chat, because, like I say, man, we talk about sports ad nauseum. We talk about the weather ad nauseum. We talk about bloody reality TV ad nauseum. Why don't we talk about what's going on really in our minds? Because just having this conversation, again, it's therapy for me. It's cathartic. So let's keep the talk going. I really appreciate it, Aaron. Thank you.
That was the bipolar rock and roller, Mauro Ranallo. You know, very, very, very honest conversation with him about what he goes through on a regular basis in his life and his struggles with bipolar disorder and living with bipolar disorder. I've worked with Mauro. He's a sweetheart. I really enjoy working with him.
Yeah, man, I got to call fights with him, which is crazy. Like, that's it's such a cool experience, such a cool learning experience. It's been, it's nuts. And to say that on my resume is honestly just incredible to have. So I'm happy to know Mauro as a friend, too. I mean, he's called my fights. We've got to hang out at hotels together and backstage and just sitting here, like, I'd see him in the elevator, and it'd be like, "Hey, Joseph Baldellini, hey, amigo," and he just, and it's like, "Are we on air?" Like, yeah, I keep looking, like, "Is there a camera on? Like, why is Marvel talking?"
His boy,
like
he's
that?
Always on.
Yeah, oh yeah,
always on.
And I think the Italian Canadian connection, like, really had a good connection with my father as well. Just amazing person all around. I'm really happy to have worked with him.
Yeah, and he's always been very honest about his bipolar disorder, and kind of has made it part of his persona and part of his being.
Yeah, but I've heard him and like some of his stuff. I don't know if it's a spoiler or anything, but he was talking a lot of time how he was in like psych wards, and at one point he was thrown on all these medications, and at one point he's in a hospital ward running around naked, apparently, hopped up on all these drugs and stuff like that. So I'm happy to hear him, you know, get through it and talk about even how big cannabis has been part of his life to help him with his bipolar. So, yeah, thanks for spreading the word, Mauro.
All right. And we also have some more guests in studio. Now, you know, this is an MMA show, but... we did have in our building, and you know, I would hate to have these guys in the building and not talk to them. Leonard Ellerbe, the CEO of Mayweather Promotions, as well as Badu Jack, who's one of the Mayweather Promotions fighters, and he's in the main event at the Air Canada Centre, the biggest boxing card we've had here in a long, long, long time. He's headlining against Adonis Stevenson. This is going to be one heck of a card, and they join us now on the TSN MMA show. All right, so the money team is in the house here. We're going to shift from MMA for a moment because we've got the biggest boxing match that has come to Toronto in over 30 years happening this weekend on May 19th at the Air Canada Centre. And one half of the main event is here. That's Badu Jack fighting for your third championship title, trying to add some hardware.
Yes, I'm very thankful for this opportunity. I'm very excited, you know, fighting in Toronto, my second time in Canada. So I can't wait. It's three more days.
And with you is Leonard Ellerbe, the CEO of Mayweather Promotions. So what made you decide to put this fight in Toronto, of all places? I mean, it's been a long time since we've had a fight of this magnitude.
We love Toronto. We love the fans. The fans, Badu Jack has so many fans here, Canadian fans. They want to see Adonis Stevenson go down on Saturday night, and it's happening.
That's been a while since Adonis Stevenson's gone down. He hasn't been fighting that regularly, but he's, you know, 40 years of age. Do you think you're getting the Adonis Stevenson at the right time?
I don't see him as like an old fighter because he's been knocking everybody out and he hasn't fought the top guys. But I don't look at it like that. I think he take care of his body. I don't think he's like a 35 year old like myself. But I'm not I don't fight like a 35 year old. I fight like a 25 year old.
How are you liking Toronto?
Huh?
How are you liking Toronto?
I love Toronto. It's really beautiful. It reminds me of New York a little bit, but cleaner.
Your last fight, you put someone into retirement. Is that the goal this weekend?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But whatever he do with his career, I wish nothing bad on him, but you know, my job is to go in there and hurt him. This is the hurt business.
Absolutely. You know, I looked at tickets today, and there's not a whole lot of them left. It looks like this has been there's been a really good reception for this in the city.
Yeah, there's a tremendous reception. Again, as you mentioned earlier, it's the biggest fight here in the last 30 years, and that's what the fans want. They want to see the best fighting the best, and that's what you're going to get this Saturday night. Adonis, he's a terrific fighter, but Badu Jack is just better. And come Saturday night, Badu's taking that WBC green belt back to Las Vegas.
So is the goal to have Toronto become more of a boxing market with putting a big event here, seeing how it does, and trying to do future events here of this magnitude?
Of course. This will be the first of many events that Mayweather Promotions will be promoting here in Toronto, and we are very excited, with the reception that we've gotten thus far, and that's what it's all about. The fans here will support great events, and that's what we're going to bring them.
And we have Cody Crowley from Peterborough. He's a member of the money team, so it's nice to see some homegrown talent.
Yep, Cody, he works with us.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we talked about this a little bit before we got started, which was the press conference last year in Toronto. It's been almost a year since the craziest really fight that was ever really put together. You're, you know, crossing boundaries, taking two guys from two different sports, putting them up against each other in what seemed to be a pretty competitive fight, you know, as it went on, and broke records as it happened. So, you know, a year removed, that press conference, does that stand out to you really as a moment that will last the test of time in terms of combat sports?
Yes, it probably was the biggest, it actually was the biggest press conference that I've ever been to. It was just, again, it was just unbelievable. And we expect the same kind of reception this Saturday night. You know, I know lots of fans that want Adonis Stevenson to lose, and Badu Jack is he will come Saturday night. He will have the majority of the fans in the arena, and that's something very exciting, and it means a lot to the sport. Badu's he's the consummate professional. Many of the fighters in the United States and the media across the world, they want to see him successful this Saturday night, and he's ready to go in there and do his thing.
You were on a feature fight during the Mayweather-McGregor card. What was that fight week like for you in comparison to previous ones?
I mean, it's probably, yeah, the biggest card I've been to. I mean, been a part of. You know, but I only focus on myself on winning the world title that fight. So for me, it was just another day at work.
How did you think McGregor did? Honestly, from a boxing perspective, how did you think that he did against Floyd Mayweather?
I mean, he did all right, but Floyd was just, you know, playing with him, kind of. That was his tactic to give the fans a good fight too. You know, he could have stopped him earlier if he wanted to, I think. But he's a fighter. You know, Conor McGregor is a fighter, but it's a little different to fight Floyd Mayweather, the best fighter of our generation. You know, but no, he did all right.
It's a pretty steep competition climb, I guess, for your first professional fight.
Yeah, definitely.
Against the now 50-0 Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah.
So that's what everybody's kind of been saying from the boxing community, that Floyd was kind of leading the fight. You know,
yeah.
He was dictating what he wanted to do with it. He wanted to give the fans a bit of a thrill. Is that something that you can afford to do in a boxing match, that you can kind of play with your opponent in that fashion and make it exciting just for the sake of making it exciting and living up to the hype?
If you're Floyd Mayweather, you can do whatever you want to do. So, yeah. I mean, it's two different sports. And, I mean, he could probably punch well for MMA, but in boxing, it's different technique. It's a different sport, you know. It's a different level.
So on the flip side of that, we've heard a lot of Floyd talking about getting into mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
You know, he's 50 and he's got an amazing legacy in boxing. What does he need to prove? Like, why does he want to do this?
You have to ask him that question. You'll get an opportunity to, you know, there's been a lot of rumors out there, and I'm hearing the rumors just like everyone else. He's living an incredible life. He's just coming off of a 3-week mini vacation, if you want to call that. We was traveling all over the world. He's just enjoying his time and spending time with his kids and his family and just relaxing, you know, enjoying the fruits of his labor, all the hard work he's put in, you know, throughout the years. But he's very, very excited. He'll be in later on tonight. He's very, very excited to be here to promote our event on Saturday night. And it's going to be a great, great event.
You're close friends with him, obviously. You've been, you know, his business partner for a long, long time. Is that something you'd like to see, is for him to go into MMA? I mean, from a business standpoint, I'm sure it couldn't hurt. But, you know, on a personal level, is that something that excites you or something that you're a little bit, you know, worried about?
No. I mean, he's I've said this and I'll say it again. He's been very, very good at making great, not good, sound decisions throughout his career. And if this is something that he wants to do, he would do it. If it's something that he's not going to do, then it is what it is. But if he chose to do it, I'm going to support him in anything that he does. He knows what he's doing. You know, he's a competitor first before anything. He wouldn't just do something just to be doing it, you know, if he chose to do it. So, again, who knows?
Nobody thought the thing would happen, you know, last year. Everybody thought it was just, you know, people playing games, and, you know, it happened, and it happened quickly, which was cool to see. Now, Badu, what have you learned from Floyd in terms of approaching the sport as a business?
I mean, he's been giving me a lot of good advice as far as the, you know, not just in the boxing ring, you know, outside of boxing too. So, you know, I just started my own nutrition company, Ripping Nutrition, so my supplement company. So, yeah, you got to have a life outside of boxing too. You got to be smart with your money.
So tell me more about that. I know you're a tested athlete. You know, all of these athletes are tested. We've seen some issues where supplements have caused people to fail tests. What kind of stuff do you do with your supplements to make sure that they're, you know, vigorously tested? Because I know that's very important to the different athletes.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I wanted to create my own supplement. So we got a certified, so everything's tested, everything's clear. And we got two products right now. Oxy Ripper, it's a pre-workout amino acid, and post-workout, Amino Ripper is the name of it. So It tastes delicious. We got grape and like a berry flavor. So we're going to start with that, and hopefully in the future we're going to make some protein or some different stuff.
I know these are kind of the other guys, you know, not the same, I guess, organization, but Vasyl Lomachenko looked fantastic this weekend. What couldn't you guys say about him and what he means to the sport right now?
He's one of the best, of course. That's a hell of a fighter. I mean, I've seen him. We went to the Olympics 2008 together, and he got one loss in the amateurs. I think 300 fights, one loss, and he got robbed in that fight. I've seen that with my own eyes. So, you know, he's one of the best.
And one loss really unprofessionally, but he's doing his thing, and it's a lot of fun to watch. It looks like boxing is changing a lot lately. You're starting to see a lot more of it. You know, everybody's always trying to bury boxing and say boxing's dead. And it's always resuscitated. There's always something big going on in the sport. You know, you're seeing all of these deals being signed with, you know, OTP platforms, with mobile. Are we starting to see kind of a new approach to boxing and, you know, more of a 21st century approach that's really embracing digital?
Well, and I think that's what you have to change with the times. This out with the old, in with the new. This old school way of, you know, in the past that promoters have been doing things and just, you know, things are different now. And I welcome it. There are some people that get offended, but I'm always of the mindset if you know, step your game up. Step your game up. If somebody else is doing something, you can do it better or find a different way. I love competition. It's great. It's great for the sport. You know, I welcome it all. You know, I want to see everybody successful, everybody doing their thing, because it has nothing to do with how we're going to go about doing our thing. So, you know, it's great for the sport.
Well, Mayweather-McGregor was a good example of that, of really breaking boundaries, you know, crossing barriers that hadn't been crossed before in boxing.
Thinking outside the box.
Yeah, and making it into, you know, boxing is the fights and it's also the show. It's also what goes on around the sport. And I think that particular fight week showed that boxing can still have a Super Bowl feel to it. You know, you had media tents, you had media tours, and all of the different press conferences surrounding it. It really had a big feel to it. And I think that boxing is starting to get back into that. We're starting to see more of a grandiosity with boxing once again and seeing the sport continue to climb to new depths.
And that's what we're all about, Mayweather Promotions. When you go back in the history books and you look at the four biggest fights in the history of the entire sport, and Mayweather Promotions have promoted them. So, you know, we're used to operating on a high level and doing these major, major events. And again, that's why we're very excited about this Saturday night. So for all the fans out there who there are a few tickets left, we encourage them to go get your tickets while they're there now, because you don't want to miss this fight. It's going to be a tremendous fight, a tremendous undercard, and again, it's going to be a great night of boxing.
It's a good price point. It's like the same price as going to a movie. Yep. If you want certain tickets, which is great. You know, you can go with your significant other, enjoy the fights, and enjoy everything surrounding them. So, again, with boxing, the UFC now want to go into boxing. We're seeing Dana White wants to launch Zuffa Boxing. Now, is that somebody you'd want to work with again?
Well, we have a very cool relationship with Dana. Obviously, we did major, major record-breaking numbers with the Maymac event. I welcome guys like Dana who are looking to try something different. To come into boxing, it's great for the sport. You know, the more the merrier. I think it expands the platform, expands opportunities out there for the fighters, and that's what we're all about.
You can catch Badou Jack in the main event against Adonis Stevenson. There will be a lot of people from Quebec coming in, I'm sure, to support Adonis. A lot of people are coming in to support you. Like I mentioned, tickets are sparse right now, so get to Ticketmaster.ca if you want to buy tickets. That's Saturday, May 19th. It's Badou Jack versus Adonis Stevenson at the Air Canada Centre, the biggest boxing event to come to the city in probably 30 or more years. So,
and we're excited to be working with Yvonne Michelle Group and Lee Baxter Promotions, who was on the ground here doing an outstanding job, him and his team. And again, this is going to be a huge event. So we encourage the fans to get their tickets while they can and watch Badou take that WBC strap from Adonis Stevenson this Saturday night.
That was Leonard Ellerby and Badou Jack talking about the spectacle that was Mayweather-McGregor and the big fight at the ACC this weekend. So, Joe, let's get our picks going for UFC Chile. Are you sticking with what you had previewed earlier as your likely pick?
I don't know. I got to take a quick look. Let's go for
a
little bit.
Well, as I mentioned, I think Jared Cannonier is a very tough opponent for Dominic Reyes. I think the line's a little bit off on this one. As an underdog at plus 215, I think Jared Cannonier is certainly worth a look if you are going to be looking at this particular event. I think he's got a good path to victory. He can win by knockout. He can win by decision. A lot of ways for him to win. And at light heavyweight, you know, it's always kind of a gamble because you just never know what's going to happen. There's a lot of power involved, not as much grappling. And Cannonier is a really, really steep climb in competition, in my opinion, for Dominic Reyes. So I'm going to say Jared Cannonier is who I'm going to go with.
As a plus...
plus 215.
Nice. It's a good pick.
Well, we'll see. We'll know in a week if that's the case.
We'll see. I don't know. I'm stuck between two. If I want to go with, I always butcher his name. You have to help me with him. Ferrares.
I don't even know who you're talking about.
Cummings' opponent.
Oh, Pizarro.
Pizarro.
Like, is he talking about Puelas?
How do you say it again?
Pantoja.
Pizarro. I kind of like him in that fight, or I'm leaning towards Chad Laprie. Let's go with Chad Laprie.
All right. It's a bigger odds.
Bigger odds. That's the main reason.
All right. So Chad Laprise is your pick. You could always parlay them for a gigantic
gain. I'm not doing this. That's how I lost last time.
Yeah, I'm trying to coax you into it. I'm trying to bait you into the trap. So after UFC 224, I've got 104.50. So I'm up again above our 100, which we started with. And Joe's down to 86.75 with the loss. So back on top, baby. We'll see what happens next week. I don't know how competitive Joe is. I hope he doesn't come after me at the end of this if I win.
I don't know. I haven't decided yet. All right, well, we still got some time.
Yeah, the year's young. Yeah, I still got some time to throw some. If I find out that is the plan, I'm just going to start throwing.
You'll have to take some.
Yeah. Let's parlay. Alexa Grasso.
Start losing
and Maya,
on purpose.
Just start throwing the biggest dogs into parlays. If one of them comes through, though, that would be nice.
That's it. Yeah.
Then I'd just run out of the building.
Trouble. Yeah, you're not.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. I quit.
Yeah. Joe's going to be hosting the show on his own, as I have been paralyzed, unfortunately.
Low kicks?
Yes, exactly.
How do you assume it's low kicks?
I can no longer walk.
You're assuming it's low kicks, Aaron.
Yeah, that's the problem. That's what that was everybody's issue with you.
Yeah, you assume.
You show the low kick and then go high. UFC Fight Night in Chile, 10 p.m. Eastern on TSN2. The prelims available on Fight Network and Fight Pass. Maya versus Usman, very, very interesting fight. So I would recommend you check that out. We had a big combat sports weekend last week. We had the Loma fight on TSN, the prelims on TSN. It's pretty crazy.
The Glory fights.
Glory was on.
Glory
was
boxing,
on.
Bellator, wow. And UFC.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
Beautiful. It's tough for me because I was doing my Glory, so I didn't get to watch everything else. Yeah. But yeah,
Did you watch it all? What did you go back and watch? You watched the Loma fight?
I watched the ending of it. I didn't have time to really watch it all.
Watch it. It was a very good fight.
Yeah,
it was even when that the finish happened.
Yeah, I study Lomachenko's footwork a long time. I love his angled shuffle steps. And it's a new fad. He's totally changing the game. If you see anyone doing pads, you see them use that shuffle step. That he's been known for and using. So we're all using it. We're all practicing. We're all studying his footwork. So it's a game changer.
Mm-hmm. He's been training a lot with TJ Dillashaw. As you could tell in Dillashaw's fight against Cody, he had
they sparred, right? I don't know if they trained together, but they sparred.
Yeah, they sparred. I think they're friends. Like they visit with each other periodically. Hmm. That's kind of cool. You can check out Joseph Valtellini on YouTube. His latest video is on entering and exiting in sparring.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that one was up last weekend. You have two exiting and entering videos.
Yeah, one's with pad work, one's as a sparring drill.
Cool.
It's a concept people aren't using enough. They're either, they don't know how to enter. Like the example I gave to someone the other day, like how do you enter for your attack? Give the Jose Aldo versus Conor McGregor. Leaned, runs in. He had to close distance before throwing the power shot. So that's what some of this enter exits. And then even if you hit someone, you got to move your feet to defend the counter or throw a strike and exit. This way you can get out safely. So learn enter and exit attack.
You can learn in person with Joe, Bazooka Kickboxing 680 Progress Road.
That's it. You should be there.
Yeah. Learn how to you enter the building and then exit after the lesson.
That's right.
A lesson of learning entering and exiting.
Yeah.
You can practice your skills right away.
Yeah, or some of the easy way is just enter, exit with eating. Yeah. Right?
You should actually teach your students in the doorway about entering and exiting.
There you go. Think of different ways.
Yeah, just incorporate entering and exiting in life.
How are you
and
entering?
How to apply it into combat.
Oh, we're going to take it deep.
Yeah, exactly. That's the philosophical way. And if you wanted to be a philosopher, you could be.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
It's like Bruce Lee made up
some
stuff.
You don't really need to study to be a philosopher. You just kind of
just make up random things.
Yeah.
When practicing.
Put up some quotes of yours in the gym.
Yeah, or say it with like an old Chinese accent, like it's been around for many years.
Yeah, exactly. And just make it sound smarter.
Yeah. Confucius say.
People have made up many Confucius quotes over the years. I don't actually know any of the real ones because so many have been made up.
Exactly.
Well, we'll be back next week to break down UFC Chile, and then we'll also talk about Darren Till. Hey, before we talk about Darren Till, you sent a message to Darren Till on social media this week. Because Darren Till was sparring with a guy that looked like he was
Yeah. I was like, where are we going with this? But yeah, it was ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll talk about that more next week.
Yeah, there we go.
But yeah, Darren Till taking on Stephen Thompson in the main event. That's actually on a Sunday night in Liverpool. That building is going to erupt.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be crazy.
And then you're down the street in Birmingham 1 week later.
Yeah, yeah, we're there. So hopefully a lot of that hype and energy from that fight trickles over
plus
to glory.
Liverpool's playing in the Champions League final. And Bellator is, I believe, in London on the Friday. There's like a lot going on there in the course of a week.
All right.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Joe. We'll be back next week.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA Show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.